Tonight's study we're in the final chapter of Zechariah again. And I think we left off maybe at the fifth or sixth verse last week. I didn't make a note of it in my notes, but we'll go back and pick up with verse 5 because there's 21 verses here in the last chapter of Zechariah, and I doubt if we'll get through all of it because there's quite a little bit of places that we need to go to and look at and see, get an understanding here about the situation we're in. Of course, this is the Lord's Day, and dealing with here in the 14th chapter of Zechariah, and we'll start with verse 5. And you know, we were talking last week about the earthquake that took place that was talked about, and the Mount of Olives, when Christ came back to the Mount of Olives and his feet stood in that day, it said, upon the Mount of Olives in his return back, which is yet future for us. And of course, it was the same location as to where he went up. And it said that it was before Jerusalem on the east. And it said the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof, split in half. And part of it, half of it's going to go the east, the other half toward the west. The mount stayed intact. It just split down the middle. And it created a great valley or a wide level space, if you will, because that's what we're basically going to talk about quite a little bit tonight. And it said half the mountain would remove to the north and the other half to the south. So when the two mountains, when the mountains split and moved half one way and half the other, that was east and west. And so then the valley, was to the north and south of Jerusalem, and so that's pretty much, I think, where we left off. We still may have went on another verse, but whether we did or not. But the study tonight is study 149, and I think next time will be the last in the Old Testament, so it'll be 150. So, in today's date is the 27th day of September, if I'm right, 2017. And if I ain't right, my checkbook won't be right. But because this is the great day that Social Security comes around, if it's still there. Okay. Verse 5 said, and let's look at verse 5 in Zechariah 14. It says, and ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azel. Yea, ye shall flee like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, the king of Judah. And so the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azel. And Azel is, I didn't look it up. But it said, well, I did look it up, but I didn't write the number down. And the word Azel is,
probably has for the note, Azel, a new place yet to have this name.
Yeah.
At one extremity of the valley.
Right. But it's named after, evidently after the second son of King Saul.
Huh.
according to the notes. And I don't know why it would be that, but and so it's a noble place in Palestine, and Azal is another one that was next to that one when I looked it up, and so Azal and Azel, A-Z-A-L and A-Z-E-L is probably the other end. Or maybe that's the one that was named after the son of King Solomon. Okay. So these notes were a week or two old, so
they
kind of got cold. I couldn't read them too good.
That's why.
And it said, yea, you shall flee or run. And it said, yes, you can flee and run. And flee there is 3212, and that's Yawlak. That's the word of, that we've been using for walk. And run is part of that. Like as you fled from before the earthquake. And that earthquake that took place in Uzziah's time was, they were told 2 years before the earthquake came that they would be one. So if you don't think God's in charge, then you need to think again in that respect, because in the days of Uzziah, the king of Judah, and the Lord my God said, shall come with all the saints, with the holy ones and the angels, with his holy ones and his angels. And so that was forecast 2 years before it happened over there. And I believe that was in the book of Amos, if I can remember where I looked in my notes for that. And I guess I wasn't taking too good of notes at that particular time. Oh, I read it said, my Lord, my God, shall come and all the saints with thee. Then we get to verse 6, and I'm pretty sure we didn't cover this. 6, 7, and 8 deals with events and circumstances concerning the Lord's day and Jehovah going forth. So you got 6 through 8, you got events and consequences of those events, and then in verse 9 you got Jehovah reigning, him going to be here on the earth, of course, to start, I guess, that 1,000-year reign, whatever that might be. And it says in 6, and it shall come to pass that in that day the light shall not be clear nor dark. And the note here says that this is an event like not to any other event being the same in the scripture. That it shall come to pass that day there's going to be light, but not shining light. And it's not going to be dark, but it's going to be dense, not like night. So it's neither going to be light nor it's going to be dark for that day, when that day comes that it's talking about here in verse 6. And it says in verse 7, but it shall be one day which shall be known to the Lord. Not day, not night, nor night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. So in verse 7, it's talking about it, the continuous day that we're reading about here. Of course, it says it is a unique time which sits alone or stands alone from other days, And it's a day that shall be known to the Lord. So it wasn't revealed when that day was coming, but it's going to come to pass in the Lord's day sometime, evidently pretty early in that, but it's known to Elohim. Not day, not night, but it shall come to pass. So it's going to happen. And it's going to be just like we're reading about. So it will happen that at evening time that it shall be light. And the companion Bible says, this forbids any assumption and should restrain our curiosity as to this day. It's not going to be actually day. It's not actually going to be night. And it answers to not bright nor dense.
Sounds like an eclipse.
In verse 6.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's exactly how it looked, too.
Yeah.
Like it was in between.
It's a kind of a
twilight.
Kind of a twilight, like it was when it became total eclipse, and it evidently is going to stay that way for a full day. And then in verse 8, it says, and it shall be in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, and half of them toward the hinder sea, summer and in winter shall it be. So, you know, we read in chapter 13, verse 1, let's just turn back a page and read it again. And it hasn't been that many studies ago since we've done this, but let's refresh your mind, and then we'll go back to somewhere else. Because here we find that Scripture is repeating itself to the point to where we can kind of get a fix. 13:1 says, in that day there shall be a fountain open to the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. So there he talks about a fountain, but it also talks about another fountain. And that was chapter 1. But let's go back to Ezekiel. And this is one of the three or four chapters in Ezekiel that we did not cover when I went through Ezekiel. But let's turn back to Ezekiel 47 and look at verses 1 through 12 for just a little bit. Ezekiel 47, that's on page 1175. If you've got a companion Bible. Let's see, 1175. Here we go. Ezekiel 47. Yeah. When we were going through Ezekiel, we were just kind of hitting the highlights of the book, but when you go back and you look at the scheme of things, if it wasn't important, it wouldn't have been in Ezekiel anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. It said the healing of the land in the notes, and it's verses 1 through 12. You got the water of the trees, the water in the trees. It's an alternating subject here. It says, afterwards he brought me again into the door of the house. And, of course, this is Ezekiel talking. And behold, the waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward. For the forefront of the house stood toward the east, and the waters came down from under from the right side of the house at the south side of the altar. Then brought he me out of the way of the gate northward and led me about the way without unto the utter gate by the way that looketh eastward. And behold, there ran out waters on the right side. And when the man that had the line in his hand went forth eastward, he measured 1,000 cubits. And he brought me through the waters, and the waters were up to the ankles. Again, he measured 1,000 cubits and brought me through the waters, and the waters were up to the knee. Again, he measured 1,000 and he brought me through, and the waters were to the loins. Afterward, he measured 1,000 and it was a river that I could not pass over, for the waters were risen. Waters to swim in, a river that could not be passed over. Now, we're talking about the house of God here, and we're also talking about the Jerusalem area, and the Jerusalem area had a cistern system in it. You remember the pool of Siloam was in there, and that occasionally from this artesian well they'd get a flow of water in, and it would trouble the water in the pool, and the people were sitting around the pool to jump in it when the water got troubled. And so this is a whole different deal, because they had to pipe that water in to Jerusalem, and here it's flowing out from under the building. Now, at this point in time, in the Lord's day, it doesn't. I don't know that Ezekiel tells you it's the Lord's day, but Zechariah does. And it's the same water, evidently. And you see how great it is, and that water couldn't go down that ductwork or that thing that where they directed water in the town there. Not that much water. They couldn't have dammed up a river and diverted the whole river in there. So this is the fountain of water that the Lord turned loose in that situation. Okay. Well, let's go to verse 6 here of Ezekiel 47. And he said to me, Son of man, here's 100 times that it was used in Ezekiel. And he says, Son of Adam, hast thou seen this? Then he brought me, and he caused me to return to the brink of the river. Now when I had returned, behold, at the bank of the river, there were many trees on one side and on the other. And then he said unto me, These waters issue out toward the east country, and go down into the desert, and go into the sea, which being brought forth into the seas, the waters shall be healed. And it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whithersoever the river shall come, shall live, and there shall be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters shall come hither, for they shall be healed, and everything shall live whither the river cometh. And it shall come to pass that the fishes shall stand upon it from En-Gedi even unto En-Eglon. They shall be a place to spread forth nets. Their fish shall be according to their kinds, as the fish of the great sea, exceedingly many. But the miry places thereof and the marshes thereof shall not be healed. They shall be given to salt. And by the river upon the banks thereof, on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaf shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to his months, because their waters they issued out of the sanctuary, and the fruit thereof shall be for meat, and the leaf thereof for medicine.
Sounds like Revelation 21.
Huh?
Sounds like Revelation 21.
Sounds like the tree of life to me on both sides.
And the river, the water for healing.
Yeah.
Go back and read Revelation 21 and look how many of those things line up with that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's absolutely true. And that's the reason I went back to it, that we might see and understand that
it talks about the trees and the leaves are for the healing of the nation.
And the fruit and all this. And Zechariah has already said that there was going to be a fountain spring forth in 13. Yeah. So here we are. We're talking in 14 now, which he's just about through with his situation there. And you can go back to, 21st chapter of Revelations and see, where we've come there with that. For that part of it. Zechariah. I'll find it in a minute. I don't have that many.
Okay.
I've got about 15 or 20 places here where I've got markers for notes here, so I have a time with that. So, when we read this, we see that the living waters go out from Jerusalem, okay? Said half of them, or half the waters, will go toward the former sea, which is the Dead Sea, to the east. And the other half of them will go to the Hider Sea, which is going into the Mediterranean Sea. And not only that, but the rest of the verse tells us a little more. It says, in summer and in winter it shall be. So in summer, this water is not going to be dried up by heat. It's not going to be dried up by anything, because it is going to be God's water, and it's going to be that's necessary. And in the winter, it's not going to be congealed. It's not going to be frozen. The frost is not going to bother. And it's not going to bother the trees either. Because it's there for a reason. It's there for the healing and for providing food for a thousand years that he's going to be here on the earth. They've got to eat, because these people still have flesh and bone up until the end of time. So it goes without saying that they're not done yet. In verse 9, it kind of changes gears just a little bit, because it talks about in verse 9 about Jehovah is going to reign. And he is going to reign the way it's spoken of here. He is going to reign over his people. And all of the world is not his people. And it said, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In 9. And in that day shall there be one Lord, and his name one. So we have a reigning taking place here, because when he comes back to the earth, the earthquake happens, all these things happen, then he is going to begin a reign on the earth, and he was promised these people for 1,000 years. Okay. So it says, And his name will be either Ehad or Echad. And there is a great, let's look back at it. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 4 for just a minute. I didn't put the page number down. Deuteronomy 4. Oh, I marked it to 246. Deuteronomy 4. 7. Well, let's go back to 5. No, that is chapter 5. I need to go back to chapter 4. Let me get in the right chapter. Oh, I tell you, I worked too
only
much.
Only says
today.
It's 6.
Huh?
Only says it's in 6. Chapter 6, verse 4.
It must be. I was thinking.
6:4 says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord."
Yeah, okay. That's it. Deuteronomy 6, then. 4. Yeah. Okay. Talking about that you fear the Lord, keep His statute, commandments, and thy son and thy son's son, that your days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that you might increase mightily as the Lord God of thy fathers had promised thee in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Now, He is one Lord. Let's read that word here, there, the notes in 4. In the Hebrew text, this word Shema has the last letter majuscular, i.e. larger than the others. And also the last letter of the last word, which is Eshad, to emphasize the first and great commandment, which is Matthew 22:38, Mark 12:29-30. These two letters taken together make Ed a witness, because God is a witness and looks at the heart. 1 Samuel 16:7. And I'm not going to read that Hebrew statement there, because I don't think I could do it justice. But it says, "Hear, O Israel, Jehovah, the self and ever existing one, our Elohim is one Jehovah." 1. Hebrew, Ehad, a compound unity, a Latin unus, one made up of others. Listen to this.
Wow.
Genesis 1:5 was 1 of 7. Genesis 2:11, 1 of 4. 2:21, 1 of 24. 2:24, 2:21, 2:24, one made up of two. Genesis 3:22, 1 of the Trinity. 49:16 is 1 of the 12. Numbers 13:23, 1 of a cluster. So Psalms 34:20 and so on said it is not Yahid, which is Latin, unicus, unique, a single or an only one, and this occurs 12 times, and it lists them there, from Judges to Psalms to Proverbs to Jeremiah, to Amos, to Zechariah 12:10. And Hebrew, all other words for one is Echad. So where it talks about Christ as being one, and in Zechariah it talked about where one was called Lord. It talked about the men on horses. It talked about the men in different places. And they were there pulling all this together with Zechariah's understanding of that. And so when it says here in Zechariah 9 that he is shall be king over all the earth, and he will be one Lord, and his name is one. And so when he comes back, he's going to be Jesus Christ. He's going to be one. And that's all we need to understand, I think, in that situation. Then we get to verse 10. It says, and 10, of course, deals with, still dealing with Jehovah's Day, but 10 and 11 has events and circumstances too. And 10 is all the land shall be turned as a plain. And that's the valley between the two mountains, made from the Mount of Olives. When the mountains separated and moved out to their distance, it made a great plain, a level place in there. And I like to think about it as being the first part of the construction area. The first start of the construction area for the heavenly city that comes down from God. Might be wrong, but that was something that just popped into my mind. That, you know, Jesus Christ had come right back to where he was crucified. And I would have no other thought really in my mind but what, that when he comes back for all times, and when the heavenly city comes down, that it will cover that space where he paid for that with his own blood and life as man, but he's also God. And I could be wrong about that. And it says from Geba, if we look at that place now, it's 6 miles north of Jerusalem, and it's, it says to Rimmon, R-I-M-M-O-N, Rimmon, that is south of Jerusalem. So, this distance, I don't know how long it is, but it goes from the edge of the city of Jerusalem, and I know it extends, at least in its width, it extends at least 6 miles, because it says from Geba. And so, and then it don't say how far it is to Rimmon, but it's said, if you look it up, it's 74:17, and it says that it's south of Jerusalem, and it shall be lifted up. It means it is raised up or evened out, that when the earthquake come, it just leveled off a great space both directions. And at one end of that space is half of a mountain. And at the other end, there's the other half of that mountain. Those mountains, they just move the mountain out. And it just level it out. Now, there's a lot of people coming here. It's people's going to come from all over the earth. And it's going to come here. And so they have to be, for the want of another word, they've got to be a pretty good campsite to be put in place there. So I think God's already done it to start off with. for that situation. And that probably isn't a campsite, but he says it can be inhabited. It shall be lifted up, risen up, or even out, and inhabited in her place from Benjamin's gate. And we can look at that in Jeremiah 20. Unto the corner gate, we've got to go all the way back to 2 Chronicles to see about this deal about the corner gate. And from the tower of Hananel unto the king's winepress, you can find that in Jeremiah 31. Now, my question is this. If these things has been left by the earthquake, and so we've got three places of Jerusalem that are left there that these people can see and say, and if they have come from the valley of the dry bones, they could say without any asking anybody, I remember that. Could they or could they not do it?
I don't think so. If they have that remembrance.
Yeah, if God gives them the remembrance, then there's three places here that if they had been to Jerusalem maybe 200 years before, 300 or 400 years before, oh yeah, I remember that back when I was living before. So you see how great the Lord is in that situation, that there's things here that could be a remembrance place, whether it be worth anything or not. But they would have some feeling of having been there before. You know, if you go to a place and you go back 50 years later, if you look around, there may be very few things you could see even in the life that you have. But to think if you died without having received your promise, and then you get the promise again, you get the promise, well, I'm going to have him, I'm going to be there 1,000 years, but here we are. Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, down on the other end of town, I remember that. Would that not refresh your heart, son, in that sense that would happen? It would for me. So, we could go there, but, might be better to make a note of it. The Benjamin's Gate is Jeremiah 20 verse 2. The corner gate is 2 Chronicles 26, chapter 26, verse 9. And the tower of Hananel unto the king's winepress is mentioned in Jeremiah 31, 38. Look at verses 36 to 40 for that. So this verse 10 and 11 talks about events and circumstances. And it doesn't say, and it doesn't give you much noteworthy stuff there that these things that we're talking about here in 11 or 10 that it just don't give you anything in the notes to give you more than just that Jerusalem is going to be inhabited and Benjamin's gate's going to be there. We don't know how much damage was done to the whole place by the earthquake. But you got Benjamin's gate, you got the corner gate, and you got the tower listed there in 10 for some reason. And we don't get a reason for that. And so, I can only speculate as to it, and I already have. That may or may not be why these things were mentioned. But it seems to me that if you go back to the Valley of Dry Bones in Ezekiel, and you see, and Ezekiel had part in bringing a lot of these bones back together, Jehovah allowed him certain leeway for that, and certainly that these bones got flesh and blood and everything back like they had before because they died not having received the promise. And it says in verse 11, in verse 11 of Zechariah 14, it says, "And men shall dwell in it," talking about Jerusalem, "and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited." So you see over there in Amos, where we talked about Uzziah the king, and they knew for 2 years that there were going to be an earthquake there. Well, after this earthquake, God told Zechariah that everything's going to be okay. It won't be no more aftershocks. It's going to be safe. And so it went from knowing it before to knowing what comes after. And generally, with a big earthquake, there's going to be a lot of aftershocks, even today, yesterday, the day before yesterday. Down in Mexico, they had aftershocks, and some of them were like 7 point something. And they were still bad, really bad. But here in 11 it says, "And men shall dwell in the plain." You can get out there on that flat land. You can set you up a place to live. And it said, "And there shall be no more utter destruction." And destruction there is Kabrim. And it's 2764 in the Strong. And we might put it this way, "And they shall be nothing that will be wiped out." It's whatever you put there, it's going to be safe. And it said, "But Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited." The total area is now under God's rule completely. There'll be no aftershocks or fears. And the note says that all will abide in security. It's like God's taking care of it. So you don't have to worry about that. But here the gears change a little bit in verses 12 through 15. So he's talking. We've been talking about the earthquake. We've been talking about the land, what had happened to it. But here, the subject changed to the return of the smiting of the nations that rose up against God's people down through the ages. God's going to take care of them. So when he starts his reign on the earth, as we read in verse 9 of chapter 14, there's only going to be one God. He's going to be in charge. He's going to be king. He's going to be ruler. Okay. In verse 12 says this, "And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all of the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth." Now you think when these people go lining up to go against God, and God's people. This is what he's going to do. He's going to send a plague, and this is the description of the plague. Wherewith the Lord Jehovah will smite all the people, will strike and slaughter the people that have made war against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away. And that is 47:43 in the Strong's, and that's Malkak. And it means to melt away or to flow away. So their flesh is going to melt away like it's liquid. I mean, like it's frozen. And it's just going to drip away. It's just going to, just like you're throwing out something. It's just going to melt and dissolve. It says, while they stand, as they stand on their feet. They can be standing there and all of a sudden, it's just going to start leaving them.
The king in Acts was eating a worm right there in front of
everybody. In front of everybody. That's just the way, kind of the way it's going to be now. You know, every once in a while, there's a show comes on television about the Walking Dead and all this stuff. You know, it's going to be much worse. And he said, and their eyes shall consume away, or melt away, or flow away, and their holes of their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth, I guess as all this just melts down, it's just going to leave the skeletal remains of these people, and that's all it's going to be. The rest of it's just going to be like a puddle. Okay? And let's read another, if that wasn't gross enough. 13 says, and it shall come to pass in that day, in the Lord's day, that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them, and they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. So, that tumult there, if you look it up, or if you look in the notes in the Companion Bible, it means panic. And so, some of these people are going to go into a state of panic. Some of the ones that have done war against the nation of Israel and God's people. And this panic's going to come from Jehovah. And it's going to be among them, and it's going to involve every man that we call Ish. There. And it says, and they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor. So there's not going to be any friendship here. It's all going away. It's going to be every man for himself. Here, everyone is against the other. And it says, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. And his neighbors may be his own family. And so this panic is going to be so bad, it's just going to be every man for himself. And if your neighbor is some of your family, you're gone. It's like this, kind of like the Civil War that we had here in the United States. It can be brother against brother, father against son, or whatever. So sometimes your neighbor is your kinfolk. And so when you read this, we need to get the picture here that when that kind of panic comes along and when God puts that kind of feeling in your heart and in your mind, that it's going to be every man for himself, and you're going to see great destruction because they're going to kill each other away. Pretty much. be a few left. And it says at 14, and we started a little late, so we'll do 14 and then we'll close. Because that'll give me about 6 or 7 verses for next time. And it said that Judah shall also shall fight at Jerusalem in 16. Wait a minute. No, 14, I'm sorry. And Judah shall also fight at Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together. Ronnie, here's your word. Gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. Because he's going to call people in from all over the world. And they're going to come. For nothing else, they're going to come to fight against God and to fight against God's people. And it says, Judah shall also fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of the heathen, the spoils of the battle, if you will. And I don't know why people would bring a lot of stuff that they own to a battle, but I guess they do. And it says, of all the heathens round about, or all the nations round about, shall be gathered together. And when they're gathered together and they're done in, there's going to be gold and silver left. There's going to be precious metals left. And apparel in great abundance. So they're not going into this battle naked. They're going in arrayed probably in the best stuff they got. So these earthly things will be in great abundance. Whether these people can use that or not, I don't know, but they're listed here in Scripture. So you have the precious metals and the earthly things together that are going to be there when these plagues and these tumults come upon these people. And they're going to be, pretty much most of them are going to be done in. So we'll end with that today. And it's not a good thing to end on. But a lot of times in God's writings, when he's dealing with the enemy, it's not a good picture anyway. So we'll pick up with 15, and 15 will be a study 150. And it'll be the last study that we'll do in the Old Testament. But I want to do maybe 5 or 6 or 7 in the New Testament to give you a change of look, talking about your walk, your manner of life. Because here in the Old Testament, generally speaking, the way that men moved from place to place was to walk or to run, if you will. And it was actually foot traffic, quite a lot of it. But that changes somewhat when you get into the New Testament, because some of it still means to tread on the soles of your feet. But quite a lot of it has to do with your manner of life, how you conduct yourself toward others, as from the teachings of Jesus Christ. And so I want to give enough of that to get a little feel for the different, and then we'll go back to something, and we might go back to the Old Testament, something we didn't even cover. But I wanted to do that to give you the other hand, if you will, as to what we've been through. And this has been about a 3-year deal. because they've been Wednesday nights that I wasn't able to do it, or we were gone, or Ronnie was gone, or some way we didn't get to do things. And so this it'll be a good place to stop in the Old Testament with 150 studies.
Then you'll do Daniel.
No, I ain't gonna do Daniel.
Oh, come on.
Not now, anyway. Mikey was doing Daniel some as I was going through there. Mm-hmm. So, but I want to get into the New Testament with the word walk, and it's a little different. And so, it'll give you a little different approach to your manner of life as to how you're supposed to conduct yourself. Now here it was mostly being moved from place to place because God was going to clear out these people when they didn't do what He wanted them to do. And certainly they didn't do. And for the 70, a lot of it was the 70 year time that they owed God for all these holy days and all these Sabbath days that they didn't keep when they was out doing this idolatry stuff. And He says, okay, I'm going to allow them people to take you away. This is the people that He's dealing with now in this final chapter here that says, you're going to pay for it, for dealing with My people this way. These plagues, all these things that come upon you that you're going to do neighbor to neighbor, or maybe friend to friend, or even family to family, you're going to pay that way. That's what I'm bringing upon you for that particular reason. Not only that, but they were going to gather together, as we found in Revelations, that they wanted to do battle with God. It was a big thing. We're going to overtake you. No, they're not going to overtake God.
Ain't much battle to it.
No, ain't. And you see, when they start this stuff and all this happens to them,
they actually make it easier for God because they all gather up there
in one place to really do this. And so, you know, that's the way it works out. That's His will and purpose. So we're going to do study 150 next week, and I think that'll wind up the Old Testament part of what I wanted to do. And I'll do a little bit in the New Testament, and then we'll do something else. And you gonna write Daniel in it?
It'll be like Dorothy, she's not gonna give up. Huh? It's like Dorothy, she ain't gonna give up until she gets the book she wants.
Yeah, Dorothy wants Ecclesiastes or something. I don't know. But anyway, I think it's because I say we as a group of individuals studying the Word of God, rightly divided. For the most times, we stay in the right division books in that sense. And so we don't get the history lessons that we really need sometimes. The background to go back and say, oh yeah, now I know why this took place.
Yeah.
You see, and so you get the other hand. You got one hand, then you get the other hand. So,
as Paul says in Romans 15, the things that were written aforetime were written for our learning.
Yeah. But we don't, sometimes we just don't go back and learn them. And I've had not only Dorothy, but several people say, I have really enjoyed it. And I got a letter from Miss Jan. Is she on there tonight?
She is, and so did we. Thank you, Miss Jan.
And
and
tell her I got mail today from Miss Jan. You can tell her I got mail from her.
Okay.
If she don't already know.
A lot of people on here saying they got it, so she must have a mass mail.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you so much for being with us. And now I've got to get out here and fix a flat tire. I had a tire to go away on me just as I turned into the TFT building. I can always remember that. It was my first study with a flat tire.
First flat tire.